This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So, you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Wake up!
Wake up!
Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
I'm a little bit slow this morning, a little bit heavy, because, all right, I started out with the cake shake.
I want all of you to enjoy your cake. So, enjoy.
I started with the cake shake.
That's dessert.
Milk was a bad choice.
This is good. Now you're like, okay, I have to change gears here because we still had to get to the strawberry nachos.
It's nachos. I'm not kidding.
I saw that. You can't follow a milkshake with strawberry nachos.
I was worried about my nachos, but I tried to reconcile with after the nachos were saved.
Then the cheese curds with brisket. Very good. And then they had turkey with bacon. Then they had the bacon out there.
Do you ever stop eating?
My gosh.
Oh my God. This doesn't... I mean, I'm not even sure how you eat that.
I had more than I thought.
You get on the scale and look at the needle moving after you're overeating.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
Like, these guys are hungry, man.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Are we the city of winners? What happened?
Good morning, Mully. Happy
We're
Friday.
We're all about the winning.
Oh, my gosh. It will be hard to top that.
I feel like the biggest winner here.
I feel like it was the best day ever, or at least in a very long time. How does that happen?
When's the last time that's happened?
I can't remember. I think we're going to have to chronicle that, look into the archives, because the Sox win. The Cubs win.
The Sox win?
The Bulls win. All three teams win at the same time in the same day.
How did the Bulls win that game?
Good question.
How in the heck did the Bulls win that game?
That's what LeBron was asking as he boarded the flight back to L.A. Losers.
Losers.
Because LeBron gave it away, too. And not only did he give it away, then Josh Giddey. Oh, my Giddey, Ant.
Oh, I got to tell you.
Oh, my
Josh
Giddey, Ant.
That, who said it on the broadcast, I think? Like, thank you, Paul Patton. I mean, did he teach him the half court heave?
Well, you can teach him to shoot better from 3-point range. How you bank that or swish that from 47 feet away, that's just lots of practice.
He said he'd never done it before.
Little luck involved.
He'd hit shots at the end of games, but he'd never hit a buzzer beater.
Molly, not only had he not done that before, but that was the longest buzzer beater in Bulls history.
Is that true?
Yes.
Wow.
That was the longest buzzer beater in Bulls history is the way that it was being described. And boy, was it described well.
Is it 65 or 66? When did the Bulls start? 66? It's a long time.
Yes. And that sequence was one of the more remarkable sequences you'll ever see in a basketball game. It ended the way the Bulls wanted it to, the way that Josh Giddey once dreamed a game would.
Oh.
Every kid has shot a half-court heave in his mind, in his driveway, wherever, and Josh Giddey buried it from the logo.
You
unbelievable.
Know, the Lakers had won that game. The Bulls were down like almost 20, right? Was it 18 in the fourth quarter? And they came back.
Came back.
And they hit a buzzer beater to win the game. How in the – I mean, I get it. They're confident, and they've been feeling good. They never quit, and Kobe wasn't having much of a night.
No,
and then he had a whole night in one quarter.
26 points, and he hit the shots in the clutch when he needed to.
Oh my
and
gosh!
The 9 points in the final 10 seconds or whatever it ended up being, when you saw Patrick Williams, and then you saw Giddey steal the ball
from
LeBron.
He compared it to Larry Bird.
Yeah.
Giddey steals the ball. Giddey steals Johnny Most came out of nowhere.
Yeah. And then he gets it to Kobe, who hits in the clutch. And then the defensive lapse, and Austin Reeves goes down, and you think, oh my gosh, this was all for naught. And 3 seconds left, and Josh Giddey did this.
So Doncic in play, far sideline, left forecourt. Doncic holding and looking at play to Reeves. Works on Williams to the rim, and the layup is good. 3.3 left. 117-116 Lakers. Williams to Giddey over the midcourt line. Good, it goes. Midcourt. Oh! It's good! It's good! It's good! Bulls win! Bulls win! Bulls win! Josh Giddey from midcourt. The Bulls logo. What a ball game. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Josh Giddey, I love you.
Josh Giddey, I love you.
I got to tell you.
I love you, mate.
But that was the kind of moment where you hug someone you don't know.
Yes.
Oh, my God, did you know?
Strangers hugging strangers.
Get over here. Come in here for one.
Come in for a big one. You just felt like it was
unbelievable.
Something you didn't expect to happen. It happens to other teams, other cities. Not you, not Chicago.
Not after watching the White Sox won.
Oh, my gosh.
And then the Cubs winning, which was great. And
Cubs scored 10 runs?
How did they?
Could that be right?
The
Flip
Sox
it around.
Scored 8. How did that had to be wrong?
which is more remarkable.
Which was smart.
You know what? Josh Giddey hits a 47-footer for the longest buzzer beater in team history, and yet it wasn't the most remarkable feat of the day because the Sox scored 8 runs.
It's so borderline mean, but I mean, it was glorious.
But it was a fun day.
It was a glorious day.
It's all in fun because everybody won.
And the NCAAs were phenomenal.
Yes, they really were.
Great.
They delivered.
Your guy Cal getting
Cal gave up a 16-point lead.
They were like the Lakers.
You know, maybe we should have led with the college basketball.
College basketball
we
was real good.
We don't want to ignore college sports in Chicago.
No. God, no. You know what? No, I mean, I know we're a blue city.
I know. We don't want to do
or
that.
Or whatever it was.
But we digress.
Yeah, we got yelled at
yesterday.
Yeah,
we did. But back to the Giddey shot. It was great to hear Chuck go crazy. And you're right. That's a great way to put it. You wanted to hug a stranger. You just wanted to hug a stranger.
Anyone in your vicinity.
At the United Center. You know what? But Stacey King needed a hug. This is how and Adam Amin sounded on CHSN.
So far.
Doncic took the final shot before that. Here's Reeves. Reeves straight to the cup. Lays it in to take the lead. Bulls are out of timeouts. 2 seconds left. Giddey for the win. Go!
Oh, my God. I cannot believe this. Elizabeth, I'm coming, baby. I love
Sydney or Melbourne. Paul Hogan is somewhere here. Crocodile Dundee. Oh, Lord.
You may never see a wilder sequence than you just saw in the final 10 seconds. Oh. And Josh Giddey from down under beats the Lakers at the horn.
This is unbelievable. Bulls Nation, embrace this team. I'm telling you, the hype is real. This is not the same team. You better embrace them. Get your tickets. Buy them. This is a special team. A lot.
He started out. He went Fred Sanford.
Yeah.
He got into Crocodile Dundee.
Paul Hogan. Any Australian reference that came to Stacey's mind, he would say out loud. Melbourne.
Magic Giddey. Good day, mate.
Magic Giddey.
Somewhere in Australia, Sydney or Melbourne, Paul Hogan is somewhere in Crocodile Dundee.
Yeah.
And he hit from
Paul
down
Hogan
under.
Paul Hogan is the name of the actor who plays Crocodile Dundee.
What a finish. What
hilarious.
A finish. And the place went nuts.
Oh, my God.
The Lakers.
Place went crazy.
Really blew it down the stretch. But when you hit a shot like that, you didn't. The Lakers didn't lose that game. The Bulls won it. They went out and they.
A lot of Laker fans in the crowd.
Yes.
And they looked crestfallen.
They did.
They were just.
There was a lot.
They should be.
It's their only trip to Chicago.
Yeah.
And
you just beat them half a week ago.
There were a lot of LeBron fans there. And a lot of LeBron jerseys there. And you saw a lot of Luka people there. They were loved.
And you know now for certain that Mike is better than LeBron.
Of course. Because of Josh Giddey. Bulls won, LeBron zero. That just gets another.
Josh Giddey, I love you.
I love you, Josh Giddey.
Now, honestly, when you burp out love for a man, that's a hell of a shot.
He handled it really well post game too. Josh Giddey has emerged as quite the spokesman for this team and saying how they're playing together. They love this group. This Bulls team now, 9 out of the last 11, 4 in a row. We talked to Billy Donovan the other day. This is a fun thing to watch. It feels like a very much a college tournament late season run type of thing.
Because they're all that age.
Exactly.
But I mean, did he have another triple-double, I believe?
Yes, he did.
I mean, that guy, he's just... He's really playing well. I got to tell you, maybe the play of the game was that steal. I mean, obviously it's the last second shot because it won the game. But I'm saying that was a huge play at that moment.
Yep, one led to the other.
And throwing it out to Kobe, who knocks down a three. That was a big moment in that game. And, you know, identify the man least likely to make the big game steal. I thought coming into the year that wasn't his skill. I thought for half the season that wasn't his skill. He's doing things that you don't anticipate he can do.
He had 8 steals last Saturday night against the Lakers. He has the big one down the stretch against LeBron, who looked all of 40 years old. He looked rusty last night.
LeBron was aging in front of us.
1-12 from 3-point range since he's come back from the groin injury.
He got older quarter to quarter.
He did seem to be aging. Looked like he didn't start the game looking with gray hair or specs,
but he
did it by the end of the game. And that'll age you. When you lose a game like that, that will age somebody. And the Bulls just keep playing together. They keep playing well. And what a ending to a great day in Chicago sports. And there aren't very many days like yesterday.
No, it was, I mean, you did kind of lose your own sense of identity. Are we winners? I thought we were the city of losers. How did this happen? It was phenomenal. They have won, 9 of 11 now?
Yes.
The Bulls?
Mm-hmm.
Man, twice the Lakers in that group.
It's great that at least the conversation has shifted from the tankathon.com standings watch to you believe how well this team is playing together, moving the basketball, playing unselfishly, doing what needs to be done in the clutch, and identifying guys who want to be part of this core. Matas, Josh Giddey, Kobe White.
Kevin Huerter had like the game of his life.
He did.
Matas even said it on his IG. He said the Bulls are back.
Did he say
yes,
that?
Yes, he did.
Well, you can forgive him for getting a little carried away.
Yeah, he's such a fun guy.
You know, he is fun. And the Bulls, enjoy this, because maybe the Bulls are back. It's something to consider. It's not ridiculous. You need to do more longer. But
well, I'll tell you
I understand the sentiment.
We're going to the game on Saturday.
Yes, we are.
No duckouts, okay? No Irish goodbyes. No. You got to stay there till they throw in
especially
the last
now,
shot. Exactly.
If they're down 15 in the fourth. I don't want to see you leaving for the door.
The final heave.
You're staying for every last possession, buddy.
Holy guacamole. That was, I mean, honestly, that was, that you got the goosebumps. You don't see that. You don't see, that, you know, you. In fact, I was kind of like Stacy, you hear him say, I told you. Meaning Austin Reeves driving to the bucket. He did that twice at the end of the game, and you were like, duh, don't give up points that easily.
Austin Reeves took over that game in the second quarter.
Oh, man.
He was unstoppable. Then he gets the big shot down the stretch. Two nights in a row, I think it's interesting from the Lakers' perspective. Luka takes the last shot in Indianapolis. LeBron was there to tip it in.
LeBron tipped it
in. And last night, Austin Reeves takes the shot, the final possession for the Lakers. Doesn't matter because Josh Giddey made it moot. But in both cases, LeBron wasn't that guy.
Interesting.
Wasn't that guy to take the last shot.
He was the tip-in artist.
All cases. Like LeBron lost every, I mean, the Patrick Williams three, he was defending that. Then a lazy inbound pass. And then he had, I mean, he was kind of defending Giddey on that half-court shot.
Kinda in retreat.
Yeah, he's got to get back. He's getting older.
That was so great. The kind of buzzer beater though you usually see in March, but not from the NBA.
Exactly.
That was a college tournament game.
That was the best game of the college tournament.
It was last night. What's the average age of the Bulls versus the average age of Texas Tech?
Well, LeBron, I mean, his age kind of really raises the bar, let's be honest.
For the Lakers,
46 now? 47?
He looked it in the final minute.
As the game went on, he started the game, he was still
there was the Jordan statue in the atrium, and then there was the LeBron statue on the court.
Oh, that's beautiful. That takes some gratuitous shots.
Well, you know, the Bulls sent him home a loser.
They have the right.
And, Molly, it felt different. It felt, like you said, almost euphoric because it was a day full of unexpected glee in Chicago.
Yes.
So the White Sox game was fantastic.
I got to tell you, I mean, I was blown away by that game. I just, you know, Sean Burke, what a performance.
What a performance.
Way to go. That was a great job. They got three home runs. This home run challenge team, we complained, there's no power. They got Slater hit a solo shot.
Comet is on strike for the White Sox.
Benintendi with the broken bone in his hand.
A Betty bomb.
He hit a Betty bomb, and it was a three-run homer. And then Lidin Sosa, not to be outdone, had a two-run homer.
Well,
they hit them.
Those were no doubters.
Those were gone.
Those were no doubters. Andrew Benintendi, very quietly, has returned from a broken hand.
Dealing with some pain.
Has to be playing through some pain. He homers on opening day. We didn't even think he would be around opening day.
I know.
Sean Burke does a very nice Garrett Crochet imitation.
I couldn't believe how well he pitched,
It made me think of last year. Six innings, three hits. Remember last year we wondered how far Crochet would go in the game, and we thought three innings, four innings, and he ends up going six on opening day. This sounds almost absurd to compare what Sean Burke did to Crochet and had the expectation that's going to follow this season, but he was very strong, and I think he overcame some early jitters maybe of being the opening day starter and really settled down nicely.
I believe they were up 3-0 in the eighth inning, and it was first and third, and the manager of all people, goes to the bullpen, brings in Mike Clevinger, who proceeds to walk. I thought that was a good thing to do, frankly. Don't let that guy beat you. Mike Trout, he got the bases loaded, and he gets him out of the jam. That's a really good decision to go to your high leverage guy
at that time.
If
Mike Clevinger is your high leverage guy, and I think that he is for the Sox,
I agree.
Then moving to him at that moment was a smart decision.
And that's Will Venable, and that's a different
level of managing than we saw a year ago.
I think you're right. It's a good call. It's also refreshing to see that happen in the first game of the season. It bodes well for the future and decisions like that. Unconventional? Maybe not anymore. I think when you go to your best relief pitcher,
do it in the biggest moment.
You don't want to squander that opportunity to put out that rally. And Mike Clevinger did.
He did well. I mean,
hey, by the way, I wish love having Alex Kuhn here today. MVP returns.
Yes.
We can't call me the MVP today because I kept saying that the Cubs are 1-0.
That's okay.
Yeah.
You're forgiven. I wasn't going to bring attention to that. It's okay. You get past.
My bad, guys.
That's
early.
Okay. It's a first quarter miss. Don't worry.
We don't count those games either.
I almost wish Dustin was here for this reason. Mike Trout was not only in right field yesterday, yes. He was at the Bulls game.
Yeah. He apparently is good buddies with Zach LaVine, of all people.
Yes.
So maybe he thought Zach was still with the Bulls.
The
Dustin
whammy.
I'm Mike Trout.
He was not eating a Subway. I did see him there with some friends and an entourage. But Mike Trout was there courtside to see the Bulls and the Lakers.
Weren't the White Sox in a booth? Didn't the White Sox get like a nice little place upstairs? They're off today.
Yeah.
You know, and I believe they were in, I don't know if it was Jerry's suite, but they were in a suite.
I'm sure they probably did that because it was a marquee event. The Lakers, again, come to town once a season. And it's the traveling road show. When you got LeBron and Luka, it's a spectacle. It's an attraction. And they went home defeated.
They lost. Those losers left like with the big L on their shirt. It's probably for
LA losers. Losers.
Yeah.
The LA losers left.
That's right. Take that.
Take that. So Sox win, Bulls win, and then after everybody was coming down from their euphoric experience throughout the rest of the day, the Cubs score 10 in Arizona.
Yeah, that was awesome.
They scored 10 runs.
They did. They did indeed.
Who said anything about jet lag?
Your guy Ian Happ. Who said move him down in the order? Let him keep raking.
It's a fair question, but yeah, Ian Happ definitely did went deep, and I don't think that Justin Steele was necessarily overly sharp, but he'll take the.
Well, I'll tell you what. He was sharper than Zach Gallen.
Yeah, I mean, Zach Gallen.
He was walking guys, man. That was there was a lot of. There's a lot of like really mediocre performance from a guy who is as good as him, all-star pitcher.
Good to see Miguel Amaya have a big hit.
Yes, he did.
Nice to see some things happen. I like the batting order. We'll talk about it with Matt Shaw moved down. It was just like a lot to like about everything yesterday. Where are we?
Yeah. No, it was something. I got to tell you. Sox actually did not play a bad defensive game. I mean, they were good, and they had a couple of moments in that game. I'm just saying, I don't think I expected that at all. I think that was the most surprising one. Obviously, a guy hitting a mid-court shot at the buzzer was the most exciting
that
moment.
That speaks to how low your expectations were of the White Sox.
Oh, when my gosh.
The Bulls hit a 47-footer for the first buzzer beater in team history, and the biggest surprise of your day was that the White Sox looked fundamentally sound in beating.
They look well managed. I'm just saying, they didn't look as overwhelmed as I imagine they would be or are. That was a...
They did not.
They got good pitching.
Right.
They got good pitching. Through the bullpen, too.
Day off today because the weather... built in their off day. That was smart. Wasn't so smart maybe starting the season in Chicago against the Los Angeles team in March.
I'll take it.
But you'll take it now. They have the day off today, then they get back at it tomorrow and Sunday.
What are the Angels called these days? Are they no longer the
bad.
California Angels? Are they the...
They're bad.
Are they the Anaheim Angels?
The Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim.
Are they still the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim?
I believe so.
Yeah, that's a little wordy.
T.A. got a nice ovation. Tim Anderson.
You know what? I got to tell you, that was great.
Mm-hmm.
T.A., you know what? I loved the dichotomy of the receptions. T.A. gets the great reception.
Mm-hmm.
And then Moncada comes in and he just gets booed. And he sadly has earned it. And then Nicky Lopez comes in and he literally gets laughed at because he's pitching. They had to pitch Nicky Lopez.
Well, he has to earn his roster spot.
There was like happiness, there was laughter, there was joy, and there was booing.
Well, there are a lot of different degrees of relevance there, and what Tim Anderson meant to the South Side, much different than what Yoan Moncada represented, and certainly Nicky Lopez, with due respect.
Yeah.
Nicky Lopez, the pride of Naperville.
Yeah, local guy made good.
Yoan Moncada, it was the epitome of underachievement.
He was, and he heard it.
And Tim Anderson really represented the Sox as well as anybody could when they were good, because he was the face of baseball, as Joe Buck said, or he wanted to be. But he was the bat flip mentality guy. He was the guy that was the leader in many ways of some teams that didn't accomplish what they wanted.
Did you see?
But it was a nice ovation.
The Ozzie Moncada thing. Chuck took a photo.
Yeah.
That was hysterical. Because Ozzie is just talking as he does, and it looked like Moncada was going in for one.
Yeah,
it was such a weird.
Yeah, it was
like,
funny. It was funny.
Wait a minute.
Ozzie did a lot of talking yesterday. I tell you, I was out there for the new studios.
Did you go out there?
For CHSN, and they unveiled the new studios where they do the pre and post game show.
Yeah. They look great.
It's really nice.
You're overlooking.
Yeah.
Even the bench looked super cool.
It's really cool.
Yeah.
And it was a nice crowd out there. So, all in all.
How long did you stay?
I stayed probably.
Did you go see Layla and Marshall? Oh,
yes.
Good.
I made the rounds yesterday, Molly, because you got me going thinking the Wings and Rings. So, I went from Wings and Rings to the ballpark and then took a little bit of a respite, and then I caught the first quarter of the Bulls-Lakers game, but I left.
Oh, that's great, though. That's wonderful.
It was fun because it was one of those days. It doesn't happen
energy.
Often.
Yeah.
And certainly yesterday, we're going to have to find out the last time the Bulls, the Sox, and the Cubs all won the same day.
It was the first home opener win for the Sox since like 2014.
In over a decade. It was historic.
That?
It was euphoric. It was fun.
It was great.
It was great to have fun.
It was a great day.
Watching Chicago sports.
You're so right. It was great to have positive results from Chicago sports teams. It's just been a while. So what a glorious day. We'll go through it. We got the pick six next. It's Mully and Haw at Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the Score.
Down, down, down. Lakers going down.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
On reopening day for the Cubs, how ready were they for the challenge posed by Arizona? In retrospect, was it a good idea to start Justin Steele? What did you think of the reconfigured batting order with Matt Shaw batting eighth?
Yeah, I thought everything kind of worked. I felt like they had a really good performance. You know, we talked about how I love, first of all, the word reopening, because it is reopening day. And I'm amused by that. I thought, and we thought, let's be honest about it, I mean, all of us collectively as a show, were fearful that Arizona was the bad team to come back to. After losing two to the Dodgers in Japan, you're messing around for a week, and now you got Arizona, and you see their pitcher, and you're just kind of like, yeah, this is not going to be good. Well, it was great. It was really good. And, the one thing you don't complain about is the batting order when you win and you score 10 runs. So I thought the batting order worked out great. I thought Justin Steele wasn't as sharp as he usually is, but he was sharper than Gallen was. Does that make sense?
Like, yeah.
He was good enough to get a victory in that game. I mean, I know he didn't go long enough to do it, but that was good. It was a good, really, really strong performance from the Cubs up and down the order, too. They got a lot of contribution.
Seemed like the Cubs were definitely ready. I love the batting order. Craig Counsell, I know we give him a lot of grief sometimes, but kudos to him on the batting order. I mean, everybody on the Cubs got a hit, I think, except for Swanson. I mean, 10 runs. I mean, you can't argue with that. And going against Arizona, I was worried because, to me, the Dodgers are the Dodgers. They're on an island on its own. And then I feel like the biggest threat to me to the Dodgers were Arizona. So I was really worried about this one, especially going into the weekend. I'm like, man, if they just lose this series right now, it's not going to look good. But you're off to a good start right now. Still was okay. You know, I'm giving it some time with that. I'm not going to worry. It's the first, couple of starts for them. But overall, great lineup. I love it. Great win by the Cubs.
So much fun when they score 10 runs and we can delay for a day parsing everything Jed Hoyer says and trying to look for meaning in the words and the urgency that exists, because when you score 10 runs and you show how much length can be in your lineup, that's fun to consider, the possibility. Miguel Amaya with the big hit. PCA making things happen with his speed as planned and by design. Matt Shaw scores 3 runs, gets on base, and has a hit as well. So there was a lot to like. How about Nico Horner? That was refreshing to see 2 hits from him, because he wasn't part of things in Japan.
Right.
You understand what he means to this lineup. And then Ian Happ setting the tone at the top of the order, where I guess he belongs for now. For now. Because I think eventually when you see what PCA is capable of doing on the base paths, you envision that being part of the Cubs' offensive identity. Kyle Tucker got in the mix. You liked everything that you saw from the Cubs last night. Justin Steele, he gutted his way through it. That was a workmanlike effort, not Gage, but workmanlike from your ace. And the Cubs did everything they needed to do. And when you score 10 runs, it makes everything else that happened a lot easier to say, well, we'll work on it. We'll get sharper, because now finally they have a victory and against a pitcher that's very good. So tough series in Arizona, but it's nice to get the first one.
Completely understand the question, and I know you've got to ask, part of your job.
That's the voice of Josh Giddey. What do you make of his half-court buzzer beater to beat the Lakers? Was that the wildest win of the season? How do the Bulls keep winning?
Well, Josh Giddey is really becoming one of these guys that's easy to pull for because of what he does on the court, how he expresses his way in the expresses himself in the locker room, and that trade is becoming one of the things that you look at as, wow, I did not see this coming. Alex Caruso, with due respect, he's going to be on a team that might win the NBA championship. They're not going to complain about that deal in Oklahoma City, but it is benefiting both teams. Josh Giddey is emerging as a foundational piece in Chicago. And then you add to the fact that he hit the longest buzzer beater in team history. Oh, my Giddey aunt! So much fun. The Bulls are winning, and they keep winning, and it's 9 out of 11 because of the way they share the basketball, because of the way they hit clutch shots, and because of the way they use their depth by design. This is what Arturis Karnišovas envisioned when he gave that really awkward press conference at the trade deadline and talked about wanting to go 8 to 10 players deep. This is the ideal situation in terms of using your roster and then getting clutch performances from the guys at the top of it. Long may it last. They got the Mavs tomorrow night. We'll see how that goes.
Elizabeth, I'm coming, baby.
That's exactly how I felt watching that game. So when I was watching the tournament and I was going back and forth, and then my friend called me and he was like, hey, you need to turn back on that Bulls game. It's getting really good right now. So, I mean, that shot kind of reminded – it felt like a playoff atmosphere type of game.
Yeah.
It reminded me somewhat similar to the Derrick Rose shot over LeBron James' Cleveland Cavaliers during that time in the semifinals. I remember that. I mean, this team is playing phenomenal right now, and you got to love it. And the confidence is at an all-time high. I think I'm about to just stamp and approve it. Like, I don't care no more how Josh Giddey plays. Pay him. Pay him right away. Build around the core. Giddey, Bouzelis, Kobe White. I love it. LeBron James was just straight horrible at the end of that one. I mean, man, you know who's going to have a field day is Stephen A. probably going to have a field day on him. Like, how could you not defend Josh Giddey? But you got the nerves to talk about me. But overall, awesome. Love the performance.
Okay, just for the record, just so we got it straight, LeBron James was, wait for it, 0-for-5 from three-pointers. Man. LeBron James, in the 4 games since he returned, 1 of 12 from three-point land. Yesterday, Patrick Williams, 2 of 4 three-pointers, and they were big three-pointers. The one shot was unbelievable. He hit a really clutch three-pointer. Patrick Williams, greater than sign LeBron James?
Yes.
Question mark.
That's how much fun yesterday
was. That's how much fun it was. It was, everybody was in on it. There were some great moments, some great shooting, the comeback. Yeah, I tell you what, even when it gets to Giddy hitting that shot, the confidence that the Bulls, the self-belief that they are playing with, allowed them to come back from what was their biggest deficit in the fourth quarter? It was over 18. 16. It was 18, right? And then you look at how they trailed late in that fourth quarter. They were down 13 with 5:30 left, and they took the lead before they eventually gave it back up and then won it with the late buzzer beater. They're playing with extreme confidence. They are playing with what they are. I don't know what resilience means. Oh, we come back all the time. No, that's not it. It's self-belief. It's that you don't feel you are on a roll. They've won 4 in a row now and 9 of 11. And they just are one of these teams that they've uncovered how to win. And it's like they're, you know, I thought Kendall Gill was great yesterday. First of all, he and Jason were jumping up and down.
That was hilarious.
Yeah. But then Kendall at one point said, you could tell watching Kobe that he didn't have it. Whether he was physically tired or mentally drained, he just didn't have it.
9 of 20.
And then he's
gonna have those
but
nights.
He got it together in time to make big plays and hit big shots down the stretch. It was fantastic. Great win for the Bulls.
That's another really good question.
What was the biggest story for the White Sox in their glorious 8-1 opening day victory over Mike Trout and the Angels? Was it Sean Burke with a 3-hit, 6-inning shutout, or a whopping 3 home runs from a power challenge team, including a solo shot from Austin Slater in the second, an 8th-inning bomb, and 8th-inning bombs from Andrew Benintendi, and a 3-run shot from Andrew Benintendi, and a 2-run shot from Lenin Sosa?
Yeah, I mean, I got to tell you, I think my biggest takeaway, and I don't know how many games they got in them this year. I'm going to have to raise my total. But I feel like the biggest thing is that they played fundamental baseball. They hit when they had to. The big shots, they added to a lead in the 8th inning after preventing a team from catching them, or I mean, in the last year they'd have given up a grand slam in that situation to Soler, and instead he was struck out, and that was the end of the inning in the 8th inning. But you just felt like they added on runs. They played with confidence. I'm going to say my biggest takeaway was the manager. Was his first victory as the manager of the White Sox. It's on opening day, and they do everything right. They didn't kick the ball around. They got a great pitching performance, and they got pitching all the way through. They allowed one solo shot in the 9th inning, and that was it. You're going to win a lot of games if you can do that sort of thing. So I just think it represented a new era. I'm going with the new era, the new Will Venable era.
I'm with you, Mully. I think Will Venable makes a huge impact on this team. That I think with baseball, too, I think managers really create a huge difference overall. So that's why I think I had him around like 57 wins. I kind of went on high, not as high as Dustin, who had him at like 60. But I think with this team overall, I think they're really going to get down to the fundamentals. And I think a lot of these players on this team, even though like we don't know like probably half of them, the fact is that they're all fighting for their MLB career. So I think you're always going to get that hard work effort, and I think they're going to win some games that we probably don't expect them to win, so they might sneak and win a few, and that's why I got in there. But this is all about the manager to me overall in this game. And also, I just want to add this in there, I love the fans, how they were reacting towards TA. I love that. You had Derrick Rose throwing out the first pitch. I mean, overall, it was a beautiful opening day for the Sox. Yeah. Maybe you have Derrick Rose. It was right down the middle. Yep. Make him the closer.
Good call. Yeah, I think the manager, that's very consistent with what came across yesterday as one of the biggest changes. Will Venable? Yes, he will. He will make a difference. And I think that he's a kind of guy that you trust to make the right decisions. It's a small sample size. It's spring training and plus one yesterday. But what I feel like from a team standpoint, you got a good sense of was what he thinks about his bullpen and who he does identify as the high leverage guys. You look at Jordan Leisure fitting into that maybe setup guy. The second most valuable or most trusted relief pitcher in the bullpen. Mike Clevinger is a guy that when they needed to get a big out, he went to Mike Clevinger and wasn't afraid to do that. Leisure, Clevinger, they used Murphy to come in after Sean Burke was great. But I think you start to see the roles being defined over time. Hopefully they'll be in high leverage games and situations where it will matter what decisions he makes with that bullpen. Sean Burke, the possibility of Sean Burke being a serviceable, above average, major league starting pitcher, this was only his fourth start, right? So you don't really know what you have, but what you saw, you like. And just the overall approach to the bullpen and then the success of the pitching staff gives you a little bit of hope for a team that didn't have a lot leaving Arizona. So now, great way to reward the fans who were there for TA. They saw Derrick Rose. It was a great day at 35th and Shields, and they have the day off today to recover and hopefully have another good weekend with the Angels still in town.
I know it had to be a question I'm going to have to ask my mom.
How did you take Jaquan Brisker's post on Instagram yesterday? He wrote, "I promise to come back better than ever. Your unwavering support means everything to me in these challenging times. From the heart, I appreciate each and every one of my fans, your prayers and messages. We didn't finish strong, and I say it's all my fault. I wish I could have fought alongside my team and win. That's my true passion and purpose. I will rise from this and come back and take what's mine. Year four will be special. It will be a testament to our will and resilience. Until I return, remember there are no comparisons." What is your read on that?
Well, I think he's a really introspective young man who feels the weight of not living up to expectations in Chicago, where his career started very strong, and then because of injuries and concussions, it's really stalled. So I want to nod your head and say great attitude, tremendous positivity. You are an example of perseverance. But I don't know what his situation is. I still don't know if he's any closer to returning to the field or not. You can want things to happen, and you can be committed passionately to making them happen. But until, in this situation, you get a clearance from the doctors and the people that are evaluating your concussion and how bad it is and what your brain injury looks like, I don't know what to make of Jaquan Brisker's commitment, because as passionate as he sounded, I don't know if I'm any closer to counting on him coming through. They still need a safety, and I still would draft a safety. And that doesn't mean if Jaquan Brisker is there that he's not going to play, but you have to be sure that he's able to stay on the field. Availability is still the best ability, and I don't think Jaquan Brisker is available yet. If he is, great. If not, then I feel very bad and even worse now, because that was pretty eloquent what he expressed. He wants to be back. He just needs to be healthy enough to do it.
That's one of the things I remember. I think we had Grody one time fill in here, and I think me and Dustin wanted to ask him, like, hey, when you talk to Ryan Poles, like, can we find a status about Brisker? Because, you know, I'm worried about him. And this tweet, I didn't know how to feel about it, just because of the fact that, yeah, okay, you want to come back better than ever, but are you? Like, that's the thing. He plays hard when he's on the field and he's healthy. I love him as a player. I mean, his comp, I think, coming in was, I heard a lot of, like, Bob Sanders or something like that, and we saw what happened with his career. And that's one of the things. He plays with so much intensity. I'm just worried, and that's why I'm with you, David. I would draft a safety. I wouldn't be mad if they even traded back in that first round, got a safety. I wouldn't care if they went into the second round and maybe get a safety with one of those picks. I would, just in case, because you don't know with Brisker's health, and then you got Byard right now, who's like, I think he's on his last year of his deal. So, yeah, I just hope he gets healthy. I want him to get better, and hopefully, you know, soon.
Yeah, did he have a setback or something? Did something happen to trigger him to write this, that I will be back and all that? I'm not trying to read too much into
good,
it.
Good question.
But it kind of came out of nowhere,
well, so
right?
did last year. He was expected to come back, remember, on that Friday? Then all yes. of a sudden he wasn't.
Right.
So it seems like he gets close, and then something happens, and you got to read between the lines with this.
But I thought there were a couple of things in here that really made me wonder. I'm not sure I knew what he meant in the last sentence where he says, until I return, remember, there are capital N, no, capital C comparisons. I didn't know how to take that. Is he saying, like, I'm not one of these guys that has had a concussion. Don't compare me to other players that couldn't continue their careers. Or is he saying, don't be going out trying to replace me because I'm better than anybody
you're
going to
get? Yeah, that's a good question.
Like, I didn't quite understand what he meant. And I don't mean that negatively. I think he had a message that he wanted to deliver, but I wasn't sure how to take that last sentence. And I feel like I don't want him to trade back. I want him to get the best player they can get at 10. And I want him to still load up on the line of scrimmage. But I kind of want him to try to replace him. And I kind of want him to get another cornerback, even though they signed a guy. I feel like they might need to replace Tariq Stevenson. And I don't know that they've made any moves to do that. But I just, with a new group coming in, you just kind of got to make sure that you're as good as you can be at positions that you may have thought you had, but it didn't quite work out. And I got nothing but respect for Jaquan Brisker. I think he plays great, but you said it, you know, the availability thing. It's number one,
mm-hmm.
you got to have guys that are out there. And this is, sadly, the dilemma you ran into with Tevin Jenkins, where you know, the guy, okay, so we can start a game, but nine times he can't finish one. You can't go into a football game like that. You got to make sure you got people that are going to be there and be there for the season.
And I remember the question was,
all right, let's get to the NCAA tournament. First, I want to remind you, College Hoops coverage on The Score is brought to you by Bet365. What March Madness game was your favorite last night? Would you like to make a prediction on tonight's games? Biggest upset? What do you got?
Well, I didn't think there were any upsets. Did you feel like there were any big upsets? I mean, I felt like Alabama scored a lot of points, man. Oh, my goodness gracious. Would they have 113 points in a college game?
Like an NBA game.
When do you see that? And they have made 25 threes in this tournament so far. Holy guacamole, that was really, it was like an NBA game. Duke, you felt they were going to win that game, and they scored a ton of points. It might have been a little closer than I imagined. It's the first time they haven't won by 20. My favorite game was Florida, because I was, you know, I had boiled water and rolled up sheets, and I was trying to bring that one home, and I'm like living and dying on every possession, because I picked them to be my national champion, and the last thing I needed was Maryland to knock them out. And my wife was there, and she kept saying to me, this game isn't close, why are you getting so upset? And I'm like, because they're turning over the ball. Like, I just had a very hard time watching that game. I watched every play of it, and I was living and dying.
Did you say it just like that?
And they won. I may have been less anxious. But the best game, obviously, was Texas Tech coming back and winning in overtime. That was the closest game and probably the best game. And, you know, I kind of like seeing Cal go out. Enough of that. No more. I don't want to see anymore. I don't want anyone else coming on yelling at me about Cinderella's.
So, mine, watching this, I mean, it was like, I agree with you, Mel. There was no upsets. Like, Arkansas kind of blew that. They had that game locked. I was like, okay, Arkansas won this game. I can lay down and call it. And I woke up, Texas Tech came back and won it. But besides that, there was really no upsets. I was kind of rooting for Maryland a little bit, somewhat. I do like Maryland. I was growing to like them because of Angel Reese's brothers on that team, Julian Reese. Yeah. I like Queen, of course. I want the Bulls to get him. I was rooting for him, even though I know you guys love Florida. I was rooting for him. But then a part of me was a little happy because now I'm like, okay, good. They're out. the Bulls can sneak and get, you know, Queen. As far as the other games, I expect more upsets probably this day than yesterday. I mean, I got Michigan. So I need them to win. So I'm going to go with Michigan. And I wouldn't be surprised if, like, Ole Miss beats Michigan State. I hate to say that for the Big Ten teams. But, I mean, those are the ones that I got.
Well, last night was a lot of fun to see how much offense there was in the BYU-Alabama game and Arizona-Duke. Yep. Both winners had at least 100 points. The Alabama outburst, 25 threes, is crazy. It was like watching an NBA game, and it was the second most three-point shots hit since Loyola Marymount. Remember that? 1990, 35 years ago. So that's a long time ago, and that kind of history you don't see very often. So that was fun. Not to compare everything to the NBA in this flyover state, but I do think that it did remind you of the three-point emphasis that the Bulls are, you know, experiencing now too. The Cooper Flag going for 30, that was fun. Yes. Because he was needed that kind of defining game in the tournament, and that was certainly great to see. But Arkansas, Texas Tech, Arkansas, the lowest seeded team, the debate over whether or not they were really Cinderella or not, now it's over. John Calipari bows out. He called it one of the more rewarding seasons in his career. That's saying something given his career. Tonight, I think, Brandon, you're right. I think Michigan can beat Auburn. It could be a huge upset, but they're well coached. Wouldn't be surprised if that happens. Michigan State's going to win. Sorry, guys. And Purdue is going to give Houston all it can handle. Provincially, yes. I would love to see Purdue upset Kelvin, don't call me Kevin Sampson. And then there would be three Big Ten teams left in the Elite Eight, and that would be fantastic.
How can they be the Crab Five and not have Tim Brando on the roster?
This will be a pick six. There's your ball game.
Oh, guys. The Philadelphia Flyers fired coach John Tortorella, who has a reputation for being abrasive but getting the most out of his players. Is this the kind of coach that should interest the Blackhawks?
If he calls Dustin the Wonder Grump, what is he?
Oh, my God. Look in the mirror of reality, Don Quixote.
Delayed reaction 24 hours later. Okay. I think that John Tortorella is not the answer in Chicago. I think it will be a question that is something you ask, because what do the Hawks need in their next coach? Due respect to his career, he's had a really good one. He's a fascinating guy. Fascinating guy. Controversial. He'll hold players accountable. He'll be, not to be ageist, but he's 66 years old in June. And I just feel like the Hawks, with this group, can probably get somebody else who is not on the sixth job. It would be a sixth stop. And I want the Hawks to get somebody who is maybe a little bit more invested in building and winning and growing with this core, and maybe a little bit less controversial. I'm not sure if John Tortorella is the answer. A lot of respect for what he's accomplished throughout his career. He's a cup-winning Stanley Cup-winning head coach, and he's great in the studio too. Not sure what's next for him, but I don't really think Chicago makes sense.
I'm with you, David. I don't like this for this type of team. I feel like he too is like the type of like coach that gets like let go every 2-3 years because he's so abrasive.
Yes.
So that's the thing too. I think he rubs people the wrong way. That wouldn't be a good move overall. I would wait and see when the season's over and then go for them. But this person's not the answer. No.
I'm not against it, and I'm not an ageist like you guys, so I could see it happening. But I think they should hire John Cooper or trade for him or whatever.
That would be great.
Would that be the best guy to have here?
And then get your guy, Marner. Then there you go.
Oh my gosh.
There you go. Make it a
Hawks are back.
Here we go.
If they did those two things, the Hawks are back.
You do feel like they would
be. You know what? On this day, after yesterday?
Let's be a little bit ambitious.
Anything is possible.
Anything's possible.
Anything's possible.
Wow. That'd be something else.
All right, we got the extra point next. Mully and Haw on the score.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the Extra Point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
How do you feel about the Cubs this morning after their late night domestic season opening win against Arizona last night? Who or what impressed you the most?
Feel better about the Cubs. I don't know that one game will change a lot of your outlook for the season. If you thought they were going to be an 89-win team, as we talked yesterday, I did. I don't think I watched last night and said, oh, 95, here we come. What I liked about the Cub victory was that it gave us something else to discuss other than Jed Hoyer's monologue or Jed Hoyer's words and address and all the things that we have parsed over the last week or so, because we didn't really have, you know, the Cubs, and this Jed gave voice to this as well. You start 0-2, and if you typically start 0-2, you've got a chance to maybe play on Sunday in a three-game series, and you start 1-2, and not everybody's focused on the fact you haven't won a game yet. The Cubs start 0-2, and they had essentially 10 days to stew in that mess and that gloom and all of the things that you worried about would come true, or it was just too long. A little over a week. So, feel better about the Cubs' offense and their lineup. I felt really good about the way that Craig Counsell responded to the opening day lineup, the first two games in Japan, where Matt Shaw was too high in the order. You don't want to bring a guy into the league and say, all right, we're going to stick with you regardless. We don't want to overreact if you start slow, but we're going to bat you fifth. Bad idea, Craig. So batting him eighth, letting him come into his own, smart. The takeaway was, again, with due respect to Ian Happ, who had a great night, but I do love the idea of PCA at the top of the order. I think that's more sustainable. Justin Steele was serviceable and workmanlike, and the Cubs finally got their victory, so now they're not going to be winless this season.
Feeling good about the Cubs. The Cubs should feel great about themselves too as well. Like you said, they had 10 days over that time to like really get over, you know, that loss. And the way they came back was really good. It's how they won this game too. A lot of offense. We was worried about their offense. The lineup, we worried about that a lot. The lineup was great. The offense was production, was really producing overall. I do like Miguel Amaya. I think he had a game. That's somebody I think we don't talk about much, their catching situation. I mean, we always know he's a pretty solid catcher defensively, but offensively he could be limited. And the way he came out was awesome, so it looked like he's building off of last season towards the end when he was kind of catching on fire. You got to like that. David, you mentioned it earlier too, Nico Horner coming back pretty much. Didn't really get that much action in the spring training. Didn't really go with the team overall in Japan and then come back and getting a hit. I think everyone, too, getting a hit is key. I mean, like I said, Swanson didn't get a hit in this game, but he did get a hit overall in Japan. So now they all got that monkey off their back. So that's one thing I like, and now they can just build from here and try to win this series overall against the Diamondbacks.
Yeah, I agree with you. I thought that Happer had a really good game, and he really did impress me with how he performed. And I thought, you know, we kind of set the table for him. What I liked was that they gave up a run in the second, and then they came right back and took the lead in that game. And that, I think, is the mark of a good team. And I think they understood that that they needed to do that, that it was an important game for them to win. So I felt good about them being able to do that. And, you know, the Cubs are going to be good. But I think we had a little hold-your-breath moment just because they went 0-2 in Japan.
Well, let's call it a crisis.
It was a crisis of confidence. Are you going to call it a crisis?
Maybe.
I think that might be. Well,
crisis is overstating it, because it wasn't a real crisis, but you did feel a crisis of confidence.
I think they lost a pair of games to the best team on the planet. It was kind of a homecoming situation. It was all about Ohtani. He got his home run. Even though he didn't hit a home run, they gave it to him because he's Ohtani in Japan. So I think that's – but we were worried. Well, wait a minute now. If they lose this series, if they start stacking losses, that, you know, maybe we got a little ahead of it.
Dustin not being here, we need to represent the overreaction portion of the program,
yes,
the unnecessary panic. Yeah. I think there is one element of last night that I think those kinds of people may react to and overreact to. Ryan Pressly pitched one inning and gave up two hits and a run.
Yeah,
it was a low-leverage situation, but still, his first stateside appearance for the Cubs was not clean, and it was not flawless. And if you are worried about such things, about how many saves they will blow this year, that didn't necessarily instill you with confidence.
That's fair enough, but it wasn't a closing situation.
I'm not trying to kill your buzz.
You're not killing my buzz. I'm just saying, watching it from a distance without the emotion that others may feel about it, I thought, wow, they played well, and they beat a good team in Arizona, and they're starting their season strong.
And by that time of the night, we were all very giddy.
Yes, we were. We were so very giddy for many different reasons. All right, we've got your calls next, 312-644-6767, whatever direction you want to go. We'll talk about any winner you want to talk about in Chicago.
Were you at the Bulls game? Were you at the Sox game? Or did you stay home and watch the Cubs? All were winners last night.
Maybe either. We got people driving back from Arizona. What? Why did you only go out for one? It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to score.
Josh Giddey, I love you.
2 seconds left. Giddey for the win. Go!
Oh, my God. I cannot believe this. Elizabeth, I'm coming, baby.
My God. Improbable.
Unbelievable.
Impossible.
Magic Giddey. Good day, mate. Somewhere in Australia, Sydney, or Melbourne. Paul Hogan is somewhere here. Crocodile Dundee.
I got to tell you, Stacy is so funny.
The
music in the background of San Francisco.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Elizabeth. Oh, my God. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the score. A lot of people nearly had a grabber.
Yeah, I think it was understandable. Look, J.J. Redick pretty much had a grabber. He called it devastation was the word that he used postgame. The Lakers were up by as many as 18 points. Yes. In the fourth quarter. Mully, with 12.6 seconds left, they led by 5. And the Bulls won anyway, hitting 3 three-pointers, Patrick Williams, Kobe White, and then the dagger, the longest buzzer beater in Bulls history. Josh Giddey makes history. How much fun was that?
Did he get $1 million for that shot? That was one of those.
Free tuition.
Launching it.
Josh Giddey beat the Lakers and got free tuition for a year. Yeah. Wherever he chooses to go. In one of those halftime contests. Oh, and Josh Giddey pulled out of the stands. No, he is playing like he is a foundational piece. He wants to get paid.
Well,
at the beginning of the season, we heard him say, or the reports were, Josh Giddey is going to ask for $30 million a year. And we all bristled. I'm like, are you serious? Are you crazy? Now it's like, well, you can't let Giddey go. Giddey can't go. Who's going to hit the half-court buzzer beaters?
Yeah.
Change his name, Max Giddey.
No, don't do that. Don't do
that. I would say he is.
Go back to imitating Stephen A.
In terms of how down he was earlier in the year, it's Giddey up.
It's Giddey up. I like it.
Well, I'm working on it.
We're in progress. Workshopping.
Yeah.
It's a good team. It's a fun team to watch. Fun team to watch when they play the kind of basketball they play. Now, they squandered the lead in the second quarter. They got off to a good start, and then they obviously finished with the flourish. Here's the other thing that's interesting about this Bulls.
You can't win many games like that, but if you're putting together 4 in a row, you kind of need that. You know what I'm saying?
You do need that. And, Mully, what happened in the fourth quarter has been happening with Bulls victories. They wear people down.
Yeah.
They come up at the best possible time. They rise to the occasion. And you wonder if conditioning has a lot to do with the way this Bulls team is succeeding. Because they play at a pace that is hard to keep up with. And yet last night, fourth quarter, they scored, 44 points?
It was crazy. And again, they trailed by 18 in that quarter, and then they came back, and I just don't know how they came back. And they needed every point they got. They needed every loose ball, every rebound that they got. And they still were going to lose that game, if not for the lucky launch. I mean, there's luck involved in that, too.
It was a lucky launch. And they did not defend him well. But he still had to follow through with that perfect form. And that picture that you see with the back of LeBron and the back of Luka just looking at it, and it's the perfect follow-through by Giddey.
Oh, he followed through.
That is...
And he kept it, and then Vooch is on his back, and he still got his arm like this.
He held it for effect.
Show me the Cobra.
Show me the Cobra. Peter Patton, congratulations. The shot doctor delivers. Is he called the shot doctor? He's the shooting coach.
He's the shooting coach. That's what a shot doctor is.
Josh Giddey's been shooting well.
Get the shot doctor.
As
he's gone down. Is there a shot doctor in the house?
Well, you know, Stacey King would need a shot doctor. Chuck was pretty excited too, though. Chuck Swirsky hit. He was excited too. I love you, Josh Giddey. Is that what he said?
That's what he said.
Yeah.
Josh Giddey, I love you.
That's great moment.
That is a burst of
great moment. The Bulls are the last 11 games. They've won 9 of them, and they look like a team peaking at the right time. I don't know what it means for the play-in, for the playoffs. I know that they don't have as high of a percentage of getting Cooper Flagg anymore. But after a game like last night, I know it doesn't make any sense logically, but you're like, hey, they're playing well. This is fun.
They've won 9 out of their last 11. They've won 4 in a row now, and they're beating good teams. And that Laker team, you know, they were well ahead in that game, and they had control of the game. And they knew they had to win the game, and they were ready to win it. It was the second back-to-back. It looked like it at the end of the game. They had won on a tip-in the night before. So they basically got what they gave the night before. That was it. It was, you know, may have been devastating, and it may have been upsetting. But the fact is, imagine if you are winning a game and LeBron tips it in. It would, you know, they miss the game winner, but they get the tip in. That would be just as bad. I mean, it's worse because of the kind of crazy nature of a long-range shot. But that was, you know, they got theirs.
They got theirs. It was fun to see the Lakers run out of words and try to describe losing to the Bulls for the second time in a week.
Did LeBron talk about talking with Mike? Maybe get in touch with him?
I don't think so.
Just looking for
I hope he got
help.
A good picture by the statue, though, while he was here.
That's as close as he's ever going to get to him. Mully and Haw, we got your phone calls, 312-644-6767. Great day in baseball. It was a great night for the Bulls. There's just a ton to go over. One of the greatest sports day in the history of the city of Chicago.
TGIF. Thank Giddey it's Friday.
Oh, boy. Look at you. Yeah. Okay. We'll workshop that one, too. It's Mully and Haw on this car.
Elizabeth! I'm coming, baby!